Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download for this week. I am Jim Dolan, and we have to deal with a request, which is a good thing. And you can make your requests to this podcast by writing us at radioent.com, and be sure to put in podcast request. Be sure to put in podcast request in the topic line, and that'll get straight to me, and we will see what we can do for you. We have pretty much all the radio shows out there, so I would like to hear from more of you. Well, this request was for Burns and Allen. We haven't played a Burns and Allen in quite some time, it appears, and so we're going to remedy that situation right now. And after the Burns and Allen show, we'll be back with Favorite Story. That's a good one, too, so stay tuned.
Another cup of Maxwell House coffee, George?
Sure. Pour me a cup, Gracie.
You know, Maxwell House is always good to the last drop.
And that drop's good, too.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen. With yours truly, Toby Reed, Gail Gordon, Elliot Lewis, Hans Conried, Meredith Wilson and the Maxwell House Orchestra, and Bill Goodwin.
For America's Thursday night comedy enjoyment, it's George and Gracie. And for America's everyday coffee drinking enjoyment, it's Maxwell House. Always good to the last drop.
Well, as we look in at the Burns home today, we find George glancing through the afternoon newspaper.
Say, look at this. Meat prices are still dropping. Pork is down, beef is down.
Oh, yeah, but you don't have to worry, darling. You're married to a pretty smart little girl.
What do you mean?
Well, I saw this thing coming 10 days ago, so I stocked up before it happened.
Gracie, you didn't.
Yes, I did. They don't catch me napping. Let the meat keep on going down. We're set. I've got enough in our icebox to last us a month. Now, I got it right at the peak.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, sir. You got to get up early in the morning to stop little Gracie.
Now she tells me. Look, Gracie.
And you know something
what?
I found out, George? Businessmen respect a shrewd buyer. Now, this morning, Mr. Jones, the butcher, took me aside and he said, look, Mrs. Burns, steak is still dropping, but any time you want it at the old price, it's okay.
This is murder.
Mm.
Murder.
Well, George, you don't sound very appreciative after all the money I saved you.
How do you figure you saved me money?
Oh, now, really, dear, surely you can add and subtract. Now, look, I spent $50 on meat.
Yeah.
I put it in our icebox.
Yeah.
Today, that meat is worth $30. Now, how much is 30 from 50?
20.
Well, what's that, hey?
But you didn't save 20. You lost 20.
Oh, Judge, pay attention. Now, I'll explain it
to you. I'll explain it to you. Now, listen. 10 days ago, you spent $50 for meat. Today, you could buy the same meat for $30. Now, did you make money or lose it?
My, you're handsome today.
Don't change the subject.
I've never seen you look better.
Now, Gracie...
Compared to you, I'm a dog.
Don't think you could flatter your way out of this, young lady. Now, listen to me. I put up with your silly...
George, please. You mustn't get excited. Remember your appendix.
Appendix? Had my appendix out 10 years ago.
I know. Remember?
Well, there's no use talking to you. I'll see you later. Can't you do something for her, Dr. Miller? She'll drive me crazy.
Well, George, I started to psychoanalyze Gracie, but she called it off. Said she was afraid people might think there was something wrong with her.
I see.
Too bad, too. She told me some absolutely fascinating stories about her childhood. Did you know that at the age of 4, she played Haydn and Chopin?
Haydn and Chopin? That's amazing.
That's what I said until she explained it. That's a game where if you caught Haydn and show your pan, you're it.
Chopin. Might have known.
You know, George, this buying meat at high prices might have been influenced by her father. She told me how he failed in the meat business.
What happened?
Well, you know how some butchers put their thumb on the scale.
Yeah.
Gracie's father used to sit on the scale and hold the meat in his lap.
What a family.
Some very peculiar things happened to her parents.
I know. I married one of them. Do you think you can help her, Doctor?
Well, I can, George, if you can get her over here. Let's see. Does Gracie dream much?
Quite a bit.
That'll be the excuse. Tell her to come over and have me interpret her dreams. When I get through interpreting them, she'll be all straightened out.
Wonderful. And above all, tell her that she must never make a decision.
Leave it to me.
Doc, I don't know how to thank you. Here, let me pay you something.
Oh, George, please, put away that checkbook. I'm your neighbor. I know you too well to accept a check.
Well... Well, thanks, Doc.
You'll pay me in cash.
I thought so.
Where did you go, dear?
Oh, just out for a little fresh air. Say, Gracie, been having any dreams lately?
Oh, yes, I have, George, and such silly ones. I worry about what happens to my mind at night.
And I'm on the day shift.
Huh?
Nothing.
Oh.
Tell me about the dreams you had.
Well, last night, I had a real nightmare. I dreamt I was walking down Hollywood Boulevard with no clothes on. All I was wearing was a hat. Oh, was I embarrassed.
Well, I'll bet you were.
Well, sure, it was last year's hat.
Why don't you run over and tell your dream to Dr. Miller?
Oh, George.
That man will interpret it for you.
Nah, I wouldn't tell him a dream like that.
Well, you don't have to tell him you had it. Tell him it was someone else's.
Oh, but it's such a silly dream.
We all have silly dreams. Look at me. Last night I dreamt that I won a golf match with a one-legged kangaroo.
Oh, that is silly.
Oh, sure.
Oh, imagine you winning a golf match.
Yeah. Now, run over and talk to Dr. Miller.
Well, all right. It would be fun to know what dreams mean.
Sure, I'll see you later. Hello, Doctor. This is George. It worked. Gracie is on her way over to tell you her dreams. Yeah. Now, she'll pretend it isn't hers, but it is. Anyway, you know what to tell her, and pour it on.
That's right, Gracie. Just relax and tell me your dream.
Oh, this isn't my dream, Doctor.
Oh, sure. I understand. We'll just say it's the dream of a certain party, huh? Now, what was the dream?
Well, this certain party was playing golf with a one-legged kangaroo.
Golf with a one-legged kangaroo. Very revealing.
Really?
Oh, definitely. Gracie, the person who had that dream has the mind of a child.
Oh, Doctor, you're wrong.
No, wait. The person who had that dream also looks as young as a child.
Oh, boy, are you wrong.
But the person who had that dream is married to someone who is very wise and clever.
Well, that's funny. Now you're right.
And I'm right in the other things, too, Gracie. The person who had that dream should never make a decision.
Really, Doctor?
Absolutely. Any decision that person makes is sure to be wrong.
Oh, thank you, Doctor. I promise you that person will never make another decision.
Come in.
Howdy, little man.
Oh, hello, Mr. Judson.
See, I just got back from a ranch in Texas, and I'm a mite dusty. Could I run your vacuum cleaner over my suit?
Vacuum cleaner? Wouldn't it be easier to brush it off?
This is Texas dust. I want to save it.
I say.
Yeah, I like to put it on my face after shaving.
Like talc powder.
Yeah, only this is softer.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, it smells better,
too. It smells better,
too. Yeah.
Okay, I'll get out the Hoover.
Wait a minute. Your vacuum cleaner is a Hoover?
Yeah.
Then let it go. Texas is a Democratic state.
Suit yourself, Mr. Judson.
Yeah. Now, the reason I hurried over here direct from the train was to give you a chance to make some money.
How?
Well, I got a few cattle down home, and right now they're selling at bottom price, $50 a head.
Hmm.
Now, you buy them today, and tomorrow you'll double your money.
Well, I said...
Well, naturally, I couldn't sell you my whole herd, but I could let you have a couple of million head.
Well, I might take 100 head. How do I buy the cattle?
Well, you just pick up the telephone and call Dallas, Texas. The number is Ecstasy 2400. That's my office.
Yes.
If it don't answer, call my ranch, Paradise 2400. Tell them who you are, and I said to let you have 100 head at bottom price.
Well, thanks a million.
Yeah, well, now you do it right away. Tomorrow, them steers will be put on the train for Chicago.
Mm. To the slaughterhouse, huh?
Yeah. They don't slaughter Texas cattle, though. They don't have to.
Why not?
Well, when them steers step off the train and see they ain't in Texas, they die of a broken heart. Well, so long, little man.
Thanks again, Mr. Judson, and goodbye.
Mr. Judson.
Yeah? Why, little lady, what you doing hiding here behind this bush?
Well, I have to keep an eye on my husband.
At his age?
Oh, absolutely. He's got the mind of a child. Tell me, while you were talking to him, did he make any decisions?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he did. He decided to call Dallas and buy 100 head of steers at $50 a head.
$50 for one head? Oh, that's ridiculous.
Well, but man, that's the bottom price.
Well, it's all right for a bottom price. That's the end with the meat on it.
That's the end with the...
Oh, I like your sense of humor, man.
You know, Meredith, those grand songs carry me back to my high school proms.
Well, Toby, they first hit the music racks 20 years ago. Today, they're still going strong.
And what do you think explains this great popularity year after year?
It hangs on many things all combined, not just one. I'll show you, Toby. Here's another big hit of 20 years ago. But what does it mean to you when we play only the mellow harmony? Or now, when we add a rich counter melody.
Well, it means fine music, Meredith, but is that really a hit tune?
Well, listen while we add the vigorous rhythm section. Okay, and now we'll round out this number with the melody, and you'll recognize one of the most popular American songs ever written.
Of course, Moonlight and Roses. And friends, just as America's favorite songs require the careful blending of many orchestral parts, so too with the creation of America's favorite brand of coffee, Maxwell House. The satisfying, good to the last drop flavor of Maxwell House demands the blending of not one, but many varieties of choice Highland-grown Latin American coffees. With great care and skill, our Maxwell House experts examine, test, and select Manizales for mellowness. For richness, they add Medellins. For vigor, they select other choice coffees. for fine full body, they add Bucaramangas. All blended in one great coffee, radiant roasted to flavor perfection. And brought to you roaster fresh two ways, either in the familiar blue tin or in the brand new ultra vacuum glass jar. So friends, are you now enjoying America's favorite coffee? You can for just a fraction of a penny more per cup than the cheapest coffees sold. Insist on Maxwell House, always good to the last drop.
Buying 100 steer heads and paying for the bottoms. Well, Dr. Miller was right. Poor George doesn't know which end is which. Well, I've got to stop him. It may take drastic measures, but I've got to stop him.
Hi, Gracie. Hey, I'm going to make $5,000. All I have to do is call Dallas.
Put down that telephone, you philanderer.
Huh?
How dare you call another woman?
What other woman?
Stella Dallas.
I'm calling Dallas,
no,
Texas.
No, George, please, don't use that phone.
Why not?
Why not? Well, it must be left open for emergency calls, like calling the doctor.
But no one is sick. Gracie, what's gotten into you?
Virus X. Call a doctor.
Oh, stop.
Well, then call the fire department.
The house isn't on fire.
Hand me those matches.
Gracie, cut that out. I'm going to place my call.
Oh, you can't, George. The phone's out of order.
Phone's out of order?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Hello? I can't talk to you now, Meredith. The phone's out of order. That silly Meredith Wilson calling up on a broken telephone.
Gracie, let go of the phone.
No.
I don't like to use my superior strength against a woman, but you force me to tear that telephone out of your hands. Now give me that phone. Please, Gracie, give me the phone.
No.
I said, give it here, and I mean it. Oh. Now, you see, I dropped it. I just hope nothing happened to it. Oh, holy smoke. The phone is dead.
Oh, you murderer. You killed it.
This is too much. I'm going to take a cold shower. Then I'll go across the street to Jack Benny's and use his phone.
Well, I'll fix him so he can't use Jack Benny's phone. While he's in the shower, I'll take all the change out of his pocket.
Come in. Hello, Mr. Burns. I'm from the telephone company. Your phone has been reported out of order, and I'm here to fix it.
Wonderful. I can make $5,000 if I call Dallas before the... Oh, no. Oh, no. It's you again. The guy with the terrible temper. You'll wreck my phone.
Oh, have no fear, Mr. Burns. Now that I'm with the telephone company, I'm no longer a mad, mad thing. I found myself.
If only you hadn't found me.
I'm so happy with this job.
Please, please, put the phone down. I'll use carrier pigeon.
Why, this isn't serious. I'll have it fixed in a jiffy.
Don't bother. I'll wigwag. I'll send smoke signals. Don't touch the phone.
I'll just tighten this screw.
I'll walk to Dallas. Forget it.
There, it's fixed. I have placed at your disposal the greatest miracle of science, the telephone.
Good. Now go.
I'm so happy with this job. Now, if you get a hot tip on a racehorse, you can telephone and place $2 on its nose.
But I never can.
The favorite is Bangtail, but you bet on a long shot. Apple Blossom at 50-1. You turn on your radio and listen to the race.
But I never
They're off!
It's a Bangtail out in front, and Apple Blossom second by a nose.
But I never...
At the quarter, it's Bangtail by two lengths, and Apple Blossom third by a nose.
But I never...
At the half, it's Bangtail by five lengths, and Apple Blossom fourth by a nose.
But I never...
Coming into the stretch, it's Bangtail by 10 lengths, and Apple Blossom tenth by a nose.
But I never...
The winner is Bangtail by 17 lengths. You laugh! You cheer, you dance around the room, all because I fixed your telephone. I'm so happy with this job.
All right, now go.
You count your money.
Yes.
You're so...
Wait, wait.
Something happened.
Wait a minute.
Something. I know. I know.
You bet on the other horse.
Oh.
You lost your $2, and no. It's my fault.
No, 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 I didn't.
Well, I won't fix telephone.
No.
I'll quit this lousy job.
Okay. Now go.
Not before I remove temptation from your path.
No.
I'll wreck this telephone.
No, no,
I'll smash it. I'll rip it to pieces.
The bottom.
I'll
stop.
There. I saved you $2.
Bill.
Yeah?
Can I call Dallas, Texas on your phone? If I hurry, I can make $5,000.
Oh, well, of course, George. My phone is right here, and you're welcome to use... Oh, excuse me. I'll answer that.
Oh, hurry, please.
A minute. Hello? But yes, this is Dimples. Why, sure, I love you, honey. I love you dearly. Who is it? Oh, Mabel? Hiya, Mabel. A date? Well, let me look at my date book and see what I have available.
Hold a minute. Hurry up, Bill, please.
Mabel, the first night I have open is the 27th. Is that okay? Well, that's November 27th. I'll see you then, honey. Bye. Now, George, I'll get that Dallas number for you right away. Oh, excuse me.
Well,
it's
hurry,
ringing
hurry.
Again. Hello? Yes, this is Dimples. Oh, hello, Gladys. A date? Well, I'm booked up till November 28th, but you can have that. Okay, it's a date. Oh, no, honey, that's November 28th, 1949.
This guy is the male on a turner.
Goodbye, Gladys.
Yeah. Now look, lover boy. Get long distance operator, quick.
Okay, George.
Hurry up.
Hello? Long distance operator? I want to call Dallas, Texas, and I want to... Yeah, this is Dimples. Well, Myrtle, how are you?
This is Myrtle.
No, it's Myrtle.
Oh, it's Myrtle.
Yeah, Myrtle, get me Dallas, Texas right away. It's very important.
Hurry up.
You won't. Well, why not? No, Myrtle, I'm not calling another girl. Well, honest, honey, I swear I'm not.
I should have used Errol Flynn's phone.
Myrtle, if I'm not telling the truth, may they come and take my Maxwell House coffee. And you know Maxwell House is the very best in coffee drinking pleasure, yet it costs but a fraction of a penny more per cup than the cheapest coffee you can buy. Oh, you believe me now, huh? Sure. Hey, George, she's getting a Dallas operator.
Good. If I don't get those...
Hello? Hello, Dallas operator? Right. Look, I wanted to... Yeah, this is Dimples. Well, hello, Linda Sue.
Oh, no.
How's every little thing, honey child?
Please, Bill, get the number. It's Ecstasy 2400.
Linda Sue, get me Maxwell House 2400.
Bill, it's Ecstasy.
Same thing, same thing. That's why with more than 1,000 brands to choose from, more people buy and enjoy Maxwell House than any other brand of coffee in the world. You're ringing it, Linda Sue? Okay.
Mr. Judson's secretary will probably answer. Then I'll talk.
Hello, is this Mr. Judson's secretary?
Let me
well,
check.
Just a moment. I want to put Mr. Burns... Yeah, this is Jim Blue.
No. Hello, me. How are you?
Yeah, I'm still with Maxwell House Coffee. And you know something, Ella May? Maxwell House comes to you roaster fresh two ways now. In the familiar blue vacuum tin or in the new ultra vacuum glass jar.
Give me the phone. Hello. Hello. This is George Burns. Mr. Judson said I could buy 100 head of cattle at $50 a head. So get the order in right away.
But Meredith, by the time I followed him to Bill Goodwin's house, he'd already called Texas. That's why I rushed over here to use your phone.
Well, I have Dallas on the phone for you now, Gracie. Here's Mr. Judson's secretary.
Oh, thank you. Hello, this is Mrs. Burns. Cancel that order my husband just made. Goodbye. I saved him again. I just can't let George make any decisions, Meredith. Dr. Miller says he has the mind of a child.
By Jove, now that you mention it, George has tried to interest me in his childish pastime. He has frequently said, Meredith, why don't you go fly a kite?
If you think that's childish, wait till you hear this. George has been cutting out paper dolls.
Paper dolls?
Yep. Out of Esquire magazine.
Gracie, I've seen those dolls in Esquire, but the publishers made quite a mistake. They didn't print any paper dresses to put on them.
Oh, well, I guess George is too dumb to realize that. But that's nothing compared to the decision about Mr. Judson's cattle. All he wanted to buy was the head.
No.
Yes. And he was going to pay the same price that Bottom Spring.
Well, that's ridiculous. Heads aren't even half the size.
I wonder what he wanted with them anyway.
Well, perhaps he wanted to hang them on your walls.
Oh, well, if that's it, I guess the heads would have looked better.
George.
Yeah, we must be kind to him and try to make his second childhood a happy one.
Well, he's welcome to come over and play with my electric train.
Yeah. Oh, that would be a treat. During his first childhood, they didn't have electricity. Think of it. They didn't even have trains.
Say, here comes George up the walk now.
Uh-oh. Now, Meredith, don't tell him I canceled his order for those cattle heads. It would break his childish heart.
Have no fear, Gracie. My lips are sealed. Enter.
Meredith, have you seen?
Oh. Well, there you are, Gracie. What are you doing here?
Just visiting, dear.
That's right, just visiting, dear.
You both sound awfully guilty. I've got a hunch you're hiding something from me. Now, what is it?
That threatening tone will avail you nothing, George. My lips are sealed.
Yes. Don't let them scare you, Meredith.
No form of torture will persuade me to betray our secret.
Stout heart, Meredith.
You may boil me in oil, but I'll never reveal that Gracie called Dallas and canceled your order.
Attaboy, Meredith.
So that's it, huh?
What's it?
Gracie canceled my order.
Oh, you're eavesdropping outside, eh?
Yeah, I'm sneaky. Gracie, why did you do such a thing?
I did it to protect you, George. You see, you have the mind of a child and the body of a man.
I have not.
Well, it's practically the body of a man.
I didn't mean that.
Well, anyway, I told Dr. Miller your dream, and he said you should never make a decision.
You told him my dream? Holy smoke, I see it all now. Gracie, you're the one with the mind of a child and the body of a man.
Oh, George, you need new glasses.
Gracie, what?
Hey, excuse me for busting in like this, but I've been looking all over for you. Did you buy them cattle, little man?
No, I didn't, Mr. Judson. You see,
Gracie... Well, let me shake your hand. You're a smarter man than I am.
Huh?
Cattle prices has went down again. You saved yourself a passel of money.
I did?
Yeah. How come you were so shrewd?
Well, I merely anticipated the market fluctuation.
Say, you're a financial genius.
Well, I wouldn't limit it to finances. I have an intelligent grasp of all complex situations.
Whoo! Whoo!
Wait!
Boy, you got a smart husband, little lady. Thanks to him, you ain't stuck with all that beef.
Well, I may not have any beef, but look at the ham I'm stuck with.
Join us again next Thursday when we'll all be back. George Burns, Gracie Allen, Bill Goodwin, Meredith Wilson, and the Maxwell House Orchestra, and yours truly, Toby Reed. And now...
Good things.
The easy way.
Do you like good things the easy way? Then get instant Maxwell House coffee.
So good.
So good. True coffee flavor and fragrance, because instant Maxwell House is not a so-called coffee product. It's all pure Maxwell House coffee in instant form.
And so easy.
So easy. Instant Maxwell House means great coffee instantly in your cup. No fuss, no muss, no bother. Today, try instant Maxwell House. Instantly good to the last drop.
Good night.
Until next Thursday, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's number one preferred brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop. The George Burns and Gracie Allen Show is written by Paul Henning and Keith Fowler. And now stay tuned in for Noah Webster Says, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Well, next, it's time to hear favorite story. And opera singer Lawrence Melchior chose this as his favorite story in 1948, The Man Who Made Gold.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story.
Welcome to Favorite Story, especially produced and transcribed in Hollywood for the Dayton Power and Light Company. On this half hour each Tuesday, we bring you treasures from the great storehouse of the world's best fiction and historical stories. And each story is chosen for you by a person whose achievements have won him fame in his chosen field. Tonight, for example, we asked opera star Lawrence Melchior to name his favorite story. And his selection is a truly unusual one. The Man Who Made Gold by Fitz James O'Brien. And so, to tell you about the weird adventures of this alchemist, here is your host, Mr. Ronald Coleman.
It is not altogether to the credit of mankind that we have been trying to make gold almost as long as we've been able to walk on 2 feet. Centuries before the birth of Christ, the Egyptians and the Arabs were practicing the so-called science of alchemy, muttering magical syllables over pots containing sulfur, charcoal, and the tongues of salamanders. Through the Middle Ages, in dark cellars, black-robed alchemists worked over their fires, trying to fuse copper and mercury, zinc and lead, into silver and gold. Mystical, mysterious names of alchemists come down to us. Paracelsus, Albertus Magnus, Roger Bacon, Vincent of Beauvais. To this list of sorcerers, these dealers in magic and spells, we now add the name of William Blakelock, the central figure of this week's favorite story. Those of you who were so intrigued by the diamond lens have asked for another story by Fitz James O'Brien. And the celebrated opera star, Mr. Lawrence Melchior, happily chose O'Brien's The Man Who Made Gold as his favorite. If you've seen any of the group theater productions on Broadway or the work of the Actors Lab in Hollywood, you know Morris Karnofsky is a great actor of the American theater. He plays the alchemist, and Frank Albertson is the young doctor in our story, The Man Who Made Gold. Raining that night, the kind of cold rain you get in New York in an undecided December.
Yes, who's there?
Quickly, Doctor. Let me in. Oh, Doctor, you must come with me at once.
What, dear young lady, you're soaked to the skin. Come in, come in. Now, what's the trouble?
My father is met with a severe accident. He needs a doctor right away. Please hurry.
Well, how was your father hurt?
An explosion.
An explosion?
Oh, hurry. He's hurt very badly.
Is he working in some factory?
No, sir. No, sir. He's a chemist.
A chemist? Why, he's a brother professional. Just a moment. I'll slip on my coat and go with you. Do you live far from here?
On 7th Avenue, just a few blocks from the end of the street.
Did you leave anybody with your father?
No, sir. He won't allow anybody but me to enter his laboratory. But don't ask me questions. Please hurry. He may be dead by this time.
They started through the rain-drenched streets. The girl, half woman, half child, had an almost angelic face, and yet her clothes were in tatters, her shoes full of holes. They climbed the stairs of a shabby tenement house. On the top floor, they stepped into a room, half laboratory, half living quarters. The crucibles and retorts were broken. The floor was littered with glass. There is nothing more melancholy than to behold science or art in distress. It was like seeing a poor musical genius with a battered violin. In one corner, stretched motionless on a wretched bed, they saw a silent figure.
Oh. Who are you? Who brought you here? How dare you come to my laboratory to spy on me?
You're quite badly hurt, my friend. I'm a doctor.
A physician?
A surgeon also. Why, you're badly burned, my friend.
You're bound by oath not to reveal the secrets of your patients?
Yes, of course.
I'm afraid that I'm hurt.
Here, now. These are quite serious burns. You must not leave your bed. Your arms, your chest, and most of your face are badly scorched.
You will not reveal anything you see here?
Now, let me put some ointment on your burns.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Promise me.
Oh, no, of course, of course. Just now, relax.
I'll trust you. I'll pay you well. Handsomely. Richly. Riches beyond your knowledge.
You must keep quiet. I'll leave a sedative with your daughter, and I'll see you again in the morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. My daughter. You've seen her? When? Where? 1,000 curses on my...
Oh, please, Father, don't curse me again. Please, you're ill. I'll do anything you say, but rest, as the doctor says.
You ungrateful undoctor, you see there, the most vile of children. I am the most unhappy man on earth.
Please, sir, you are in dangerous condition.
Ah, there she is. There. I must tell someone.
Doctor, I have your oath. An oath is a sacred thing with a doctor. With any kind of scientist, I know this, for I'm a scientist, too.
My dear sir,
you must... Listen to me. Listen to my story. I am an alchemist.
Alchemist?
Yes. Since I was 22 years old, I've pursued this wonderful and subtle secret. To unfold the mysterious rose, guarded with such terrible thorns. To decipher the wondrous table of the emerald. To accomplish the mystic nuptials of the Red King and the White Queen. To marry them soul to soul and body to body forever and ever in the exact proportions of land and water. That was my aim. And I did it. I alone of this generation have accomplished it.
You're very sick, my friend. I must insist upon your remaining...
2 years ago, I solved the great problem. I transmuted baser metals into gold. No one but myself, that girl... And God knows the privations I'd suffered up to that time. I sacrificed everything, food, clothing, air, exercise, everything but shelter toward the one great end. And I succeeded. Nicholas Flamel did it in 1382. George Ripley did it at Rhodes in 1460. Alexander Seton and Michael Skrivoges did it in the 17th century. But I did it in our time. I made gold here in this room in my crucibles. I manufactured gold.
Sir, I cannot be accountable for your well-being if you don't rest. I beg you to lie back.
I can see that you doubt me. You think I'm a crazy old man.
Do as the doctor says, Father.
If you dare interrupt me, it was this girl. Day after day, I gave this girl what I succeeded in fabricating. Each day, I was able to make only a little ingot, worth perhaps $30 to $45. I told her to save it for me. We lived as poorly as ever, but I thought the child was merely being thrifty. For 2 years I did this, and at this time I calculated I had made 500 of these ingots. At $30 a piece, that would amount to $15,000. Yet,
After all that time, when I asked my daughter for an ingot of gold, she burst into tears and said that it had all been stolen from her. No other explanation, mind you, just tears. And this wild story...
Father!
Perhaps your story is true.
No. She's some sort of female miser, a gambler who robs her old father of the gold he makes.
Oh, I can't believe that. She looks so innocent.
Yeah, she deceives you as she did me. No, let me go on. I went back to work at my crucible with redoubled energy. I made an ingot of gold every second day. I determined this time to put them in some secure place myself. But the very first day I set my apparatus in order, the girl Marion, that's my daughter's name, she came weeping to me, begging me to allow her to take care of the treasure. I refused, but she persisted. She clung to my neck. She threatened to leave me. In short, she used all the tricks known to women. So, finally, I did not have the heart to refuse her. Since that time, she's continued to take the golden ingots. Look around you. Look at the way we live. We don't have enough food. Our clothes are rags. The rent of this hole is a mere nothing. What does this girl do with all the gold?
Tell me, sir, what is your name?
My name? William Blakelock. I come of an old Saxon stock, sir, that bred true men and women in former days. How does it ever come to pass that a girl like that one ever sprung from our line?
Perhaps you're mistaken about your daughter. Delusions regarding alchemy used to be very common.
But, sir, you still doubt, you doubt that I have manufactured gold here in this room? I'll give you proof. I'll pay you with one of my ingots, and you shall take care of me until I'm well. Marion, get me an ingot.
Father.
Get me an ingot, I say. Obey me, or I swear I'll place my curse upon you forever.
Doctor.
Get an ingot.
Very well.
What have I done to deserve such a child?
Mr. Blakelock, unless you remain in bed, unless you calm down, I cannot be responsible for your well-being.
I...
Well, give it to him.
You see
how reluctantly she parts with it. Take it, sir. It's yours. I believe... Oh, yes. That's one that I made just before the unfortunate explosion.
Looks like gold.
You doubt its genuineness? There are acids on the table. Test it.
All right. Ah. It seems to be gold of the highest purity.
You're surprised, huh? Well, that's natural.
But, Mr. Blakelock, I can't take this gold. I have no right to it. I can't charge you so large a fee.
Take it. There are plenty more. Your fee will amount to that before I'm well.
I bid you good night, then, Mr. Blakelock. And I urge you again not to leave your bed.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Doctor, please listen to me.
What do you want?
Keep your voice down. If you have any compassion in your heart, I beg you, give me back that gold ingot.
Oh, it's true, then. You're as mercenary as your father said you were.
Lord, please give it to me. My life depends on it.
Here, take it. I wouldn't touch gold that comes from the same house where you live.
Oh, Doctor, if you knew... Someday, perhaps, I shall tell you the whole story. The most tragic story in the world.
Back to you again. There's Mr. Rockwell, the man who made gold. Stood at the window of his chambers. What he had seen that night was nothing which belonged to New York City in this modern century. He felt as if he had the dust of the past on his shoes. And the adventure with Blakelock the alchemist had slipped him back through 500 years to the doorstep of the Dark Ages. He stared at his hands, and in the lightning flashes, his palms were like wrinkled sheets of old parchment, inscribed with the secret hieroglyphs of the alchemist's art.
Dr. Luke, sir.
Yes?
Oh, Doctor, forgive me for coming to you again so late, but my father... father is out of bed, working over his crucible. Will it kill him?
It would be far better if he kept quiet. Well, come in, out of the rain.
I beg him to rest, but he only laughs at me. If anything happens to him, I shall die. You have no idea how I love my father.
Then why do you make him so miserable?
I tried to save him. It was for the sake of my poor father that I began to deceive him.
What have you done? How have you deceived him?
Doctor, my father has told you his side of the story. How he worked for years in his laboratory. But every experiment ended in failure. Bending over his retorts and his Bunsen burners, he grew weaker every day. I realized, Doctor, that he was on the verge of the grave. If his mind wasn't relieved, I knew my father would die. Do you know how we've managed to live through all these years?
How?
By my needle. I've done sewing to pay for our food and shelter. It was very hard work, but I did it. I do it still.
But your father, he succeeded in making...
He succeeded in nothing.
Well, he has made gold. I've seen it. I've weighed it in my hand. I've tested it with acids. I know it's gold. Well, you're merely a child. You don't understand what your father's accomplished. The ingot he gave me was purest gold.
Yes, it was purest gold. But my father did not make it in his test tube. Hear the rest of my story, Doctor.
Go on.
I knew my father was dying of disappointment. I had to save him. I put away every penny I could find and hid it in the old sugar bag underneath my pillow. I took extra needlework. I went without eating. But the little bag of money grew so slowly. Oh, so slowly.
You'd better go home. It's late at night and I'm not...
No, you must hear me out. My father was getting more pale, more despondent every day. I knew I had very little time. So I started to sell what few possessions I had. A few tattered old books, the doll that I used to love so when I was a little girl, and all the little trinkets that you saved from childhood. I sold them. Doctor, I even sold my shoes.
Your shoes?
And when my little sugar bag had $35 in it, I bought a lump of gold.
Oh.
A piece of pure gold, Doctor. And when my father was sleeping restlessly on his couch, I melted that bit of gold in the crucible with which he'd been experimenting. I'll never forget the joy on my father's face the next morning when he emptied his crucible and found a deposit of pure gold at the bottom. I'll never forget how he called to me, how he...
Marion, what child has happened?
I've done it. I've succeeded.
What is it, Father? What's happened?
Marion, child, no, you shall see it for yourself. Look, look in the bottom of this crucible. Don't be afraid. What do you see there?
Why, it's yellow and shining. It looks like gold.
It is gold, Marion, gold of the highest purity. Ah, you didn't think I'd ever be able to do it, did you? You thought your old father was nothing but a crazy crackpot.
I've always had faith in your father.
Last night, I knew I was on the right track. It's the combination of antimony and salimony. That's what does it. But the temperatures must be exactly right, and it takes time. Time.
Yes, Father.
You know what this means, child. No more scrimping, no more saving candle stubs and bread crusts. We're rich, rich as the Medici's, richer if we like.
There's color in your face again, Father.
Why not? Pale cheeks go with failure, despondency. No more of that for us. William Blakelock is a name that will go down with honor in the archives of American science. William Blakelock, the man who made gold.
The whole thing is a fraud.
Oh, Doctor, don't you understand why I did it? My father would have died of discouragement.
But you deceived
him.
Yes,
I deceived him to save his life. Again and again, I've slipped the little ingot, the little golden ingot, into my father's crucible while he was out of the laboratory. And each time, I begged him to give it to me. For safekeeping, I said.
Then you would put the selfsame ingot back into his crucible, and he would think that he'd succeeded again.
Oh, he was happy, poor man. He thought he was amassing a fortune. All this time, I was supporting us with my needle and thread. And then came that terrible day when he asked me for our savings. And I realized that...
You've been making these golden ingots every day for 15 months now.
Yes, Father.
Then we must have, $15,000 in gold stored away, child. And still, we live in this ugly old house and wear the same worn-out clothes. Now it's time we enjoyed some of our riches. Marion, bring me half a dozen of the ingots.
I'm going to buy you some beautiful new clothes.
No.
But you deserve some little luxuries, child. You've been so faithful to your old father in his time of poverty. Now you mustn't hesitate to share the wealth we found together. Bring me some of the ingots you've been storing away.
I don't have any ingots.
Oh, you've already converted them into currency. Ah, very wise, my child. Well, surely we can afford to spend $100 without any qualms of conscience.
There is no money.
No money? Oh, gold? What's become of it? What have you done with our fortune?
It was stolen.
When? How? Why didn't you tell me?
Well,
I've entrusted you with a fortune. A treasure in gold. Give me some account of it.
I can't tell you why there isn't any gold.
Have you stolen from me?
Never.
Stolen from your own father? Are you a liar, a cheat, a gambler? Is that how you've lost it?
Oh, don't say such things.
Don't lie to me. Where have you hidden all the ingots?
I don't know.
1,000 curses on your head.
Oh, don't curse me, please, Bonnet.
I shall curse you every day of your life until you return the golden ingots you've stolen from me.
Is this the truth?
Yes, Dr. Luxor. I swear it.
Then I beg your forgiveness, Marion, for misjudging you. You've made a great sacrifice.
I'll do anything, Doctor, to protect my father's happiness.
You've already done too much. This deception must be stopped. We'll go to him tonight, this very minute, and we'll put an end to this hypocrisy.
Who is it? Go away. Go away. I'm at work. Go away.
Mr. Blakelock, you should not be out of bed. I cannot be accountable for your health unless you take care of yourself.
I cannot allow a little physical pain to interrupt my great work.
Father, do as the doctor says.
Get out of my laboratory, you ungrateful child, you thief. Don't plague me. You're just in time, doctor. In a few moments, the marriage of the Red King and the White Queen will be accomplished. Yes, Doctor. Within the next minute, you will see me make pure, red, shining gold.
Tell him, Marion. Tell him.
Father, I want your forgiveness.
For what? Are you going to give me back what you've stolen?
I've been deceiving you for 2 years.
I knew it. I knew it. You've concealed my $15,000 all this time. Now you're going to restore it, eh? Very well, Marion. I'll forgive you. What have you done with it?
Mr. Blakelock, you never made any gold. Your daughter saved up $35 and bought a golden ingot, which she slipped into your crucible when you weren't looking.
He was wrong, I know. But, Father, I meant well.
Are you all right?
Well done. Well done, Doctor. You think you can patch things up between myself and my daughter through this trumped-up story? You expect me to believe that she's duped me, that I never made gold? Clumsy, Doctor. Very clumsy. Try again.
I assure you, Mr. Blakelock, your daughter is telling the truth.
Doctor, you're a fool. That wretched girl has wheedled you. In less than a minute, I will turn you out a piece of gold, purer than any the earth produces. Will that convince you?
Yes, that will convince me.
Then watch. Watch the crucible. There's the scum. Now the green and bronze shades flit across it. Oh, the beautiful green. The precursor of the golden red hue that tells of the end attained. Now the golden red is coming. Slowly. Slowly. Daughter, help me.
Lift this off the fire.
Yes, Father.
The tongs. Where are the tongs?
Here.
Now. Incredulous daughter. I pour off my solutions. In the bottom of my crucible, you will find...
You've done it! The gold is there!
Of course! William Blakelock is no fraud, no dupe. I have succeeded where all others have failed. I have made gold. I...
Mr. Blakelock!
Mr. Blakelock!
What's wrong with him? Help him, Doctor, help him! Father!
Marion, your father is dead. I wonder if the world will ever know what a great scientist he was. He really did produce gold in his crucible.
No.
But I saw the golden ingot.
And I slipped it in the crucible when I gave him the tongs. I couldn't stand the look on his face when you told him the truth, Doctor. I'm glad I did it. I'm glad that he died, still believing that he had made gold.
And there you have FitzJames O'Brien's story of the man who made gold. Now, if your youngster, puttering around with his chemical magic set, happens to turn out an ingot of pure gold, be sure to let us know. In fact, you might send it to me, care of this station. In our story, Maurice Karnofsky and Frank Albertson were the leading players, and Claude Sweeten composed the score. Mr. Lauritz Melchior, who chose this week's favorite story, does not confine his activities to the Met. He will soon be seen in another picture from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, the studio which brings to the screen so many of your favorite stories.
In just a moment, Ronald Coleman will return to tell you about next week's favorite story. The Dayton Power and Light Company is a business-managed, tax-paying, self-supporting gas and electric service company. And just what does that mean to you and to the 24 counties served by this company? The Dayton Power and Light Company is business managed. Its officers are men who have risen from the ranks solely on merit and ability. They understand each job in the company as they know their own thoroughly. It is their responsibility to see that the public is served well, that employees have both security and opportunity for advancement, and that investors receive reasonable earnings on the funds entrusted by them to the Dayton Power and Light Company. That requires business management. The Dayton Power and Light Company is a tax-paying enterprise. Last year, it paid a total of $4,776,624.71 in local, state, and federal taxes. The Dayton Power and Light Company is a self-supporting company. It neither asks for nor expects any subsidy or loan from any government agency whatsoever. It cooperates fully with lawfully constituted regulatory commissions. It is a good citizen. The Dayton Power and Light Company is also a good neighbor. Whatever is good for the communities we serve is good for this company. Whatever hurts this company in time will hurt the community. Working together, we can make this part of Ohio a still better place in which to live. Now, here again is your host, Mr. Ronald Coleman.
Next week, A Study in Loneliness, Henry James' famous novel, Washington Square. Perhaps you've seen the Broadway adaptation of this work under the title of The Heiress. We've gone back to the novel itself for a penetrating character study of a young lady who loved well, but not wisely. Vanessa Brown will play Catherine Sloper, the forlorn heroine who lived in the cold house in Washington Square. We hope you'll be listening.
Tune in again next Tuesday, same time, same station, when the Dayton Power and Light Company brings you Susan Hayward's favorite story, Washington Square by Henry James.
Enjoy another great dramatic treat this Sunday evening at 9 o'clock when the Electric Theater presents Herbert Marshall in The Admirable Crichton. Good night.
Your Columbia station, WHIO, Dayton.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.